Today's guest is Dr. Leslie Bosch, and she left kind of a traditional corporate career to do something totally different, and that's be a coach. She got some training. She got her PhD. She actually juggled work and PhD school. That's crazy. But she did all these shifts right around the time she was, you know, entering her 50th year and or 51. And so she is now 60. So she's been doing this thing for a while, but it's such an interesting story, not only her pivot, because, you know, I think a lot of people can relate who are at that midlife point and wondering what's next, but also we talked about a lot of the you know, kind of services that she provides in terms of how she helps her clients. And one of the conversations we had was about menopause specifically and how, because we talked about stress and how it's such an invisible thing that a lot of people don't know they have, but a lot of the symptoms are very similar to what we would refer to as menopause. And so it's, I asked her, like, what's the difference? How can you tell? So that was really interesting. And yeah, she talked about some of the shifts that we make. And because she's a developmental psychologist, she talks about what that is, but she knows a lot about how we develop as a human. And there's a shift that happens when we get to midlife around 50. And I experienced it. So it was so really kind of striking when she talked about it, because it's like, oh my gosh, that's what happened to me. And it's like, I guess it's a part of the developmental process, happens to a lot of people. So it might be happening to you. And this would probably be a great episode for you to listen to for that reason. So without further ado, let's get to the episode now. Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul. Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And today I have with me Leslie Bosch. And I will say, Leslie and I have been exchanging emails for almost a year, I'd say. She's been in my aura, I guess you'd say. And she and I do similar things. She's a coach as well. She is very, very trained. I will say she has a PhD. That's a tough thing. So she is actually Dr. Bosch. And she's a developmental psychologist. So she's going to tell us what that is. And a national board certified health and wellness coach. So let's talk and dig into, so she is okay with me saying her age. She's 60. She's a bit younger than me. And she pivoted at 53. So she's made this transition over 50. And so my ideal guest to come on here and share her story and inspire anybody who is in a place where they're not really lit up and they want to do something different to kind of go after it. So we're going to hear Leslie's story. So welcome to the show, Leslie.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Yes, 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 yes. So tell me where you were at 53, like what happened in your life that was, you were like, I want to change everything. Cause you have a music and acting background or something I saw on your application. So like that is a little different, right?
Yes. Yes. I feel like I'm definitely a good representative of your primary thing, that if you're not lit up, you know, continue to look for that which really lights you up. And I've definitely done that a number of times in my life. I started out as a singing actress, and I even went to New York in an effort to try and pursue that. And then I got into, you know, had to just get a job. And so I was an executive secretary working on Wall Street, and wow. I did it for a while. And
so then did you do singing like gigs at night?
No.
Gosh, tough business, huh?
It's a tough business. And it's a tough business living in New York City. It's very challenging to make it there.
Yeah.
But I still felt.
Yeah. So American Idol, I love American Idol and The Voice. And I guess those weren't around when you were you're young, you know, trying to get a singing. Those are great. I get so passionate for those people. I mean, when I see somebody who is doing what they love and they just like, they lose themselves in that, it's really apparent when you have a singer and they really lose themselves in the song.
Yeah.
That is such, you get that connection and you get that, I want to feel like that. And I think that's why I like those shows, you know?
Yeah.
So, absolutely. All right. So then you had to work on Wall Street. That was a different thing. You probably didn't like that too much.
No, I didn't like that too much. I wasn't well suited to it. I loved living in New York City. That was amazing. And so then basically it's kind of crazy, but I decided that I really wanted to go back to school. I had always been like, you know, an excellent student. And I really, believe it or not, again, in my naivete, I really thought I'm going to go back to school because I really want to know it all. I really want to have like, you know, the definitive like take on like knowledge, you know, and of course, just like my music career, that was like, yeah, right. So it's very, one thing a PhD teaches you is that no, you don't know it all. You basically come to really understand a little bit about a particular expertise, but really, it really helps you to understand exactly how big the world is and how many people really are out there really endeavoring to study like all the little intricacies. And
so did you do that full time? Did you sink yourself into that PhD program or did you juggle it while you were still working?
Yeah, juggled it while I was still working. So that was really challenging. Yeah. Yeah.
And what did you get your PhD in?
In family studies and human development.
Okay. Yeah.
So I really studied my area of expertise was really in identity formation. And especially, you know, typically this happens when you're teenagers, but it does happen over and over and over again throughout the life cycle. So I really love, you know, kind of helping people adapt to their new roles, essentially.
And that after you did the PhD program, you adapted to a new role, right? Kind of switched an identity of a singer to an identity of wanting to be a coach. And so tell me what a developmental psychologist is.
Well, a developmental psychologist is really fascinated by just basically human development. As you know, throughout the life cycle, people go through many stages. And developmental psychologists study how they do that, how well they adapt. And we also do studies in an effort to try and figure out how best to support people in adapting to the changes.
And does it, I mean, it's all stages of development. It's not just a particular stage of development. Like when you say development, are you talking about like the physical development, the mental development, or all of the above?
All of it. All of it. So when I'm sitting with people, I'm always thinking about, well, I wonder what came before, I wonder what's going on now, and I wonder what's going to be coming next. So it really is just looking at it in terms of something that is unfolding over time and not just seeing people sort of stuck where they are right now, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Recognizing a kind of bigger arc and also recognizing that they're also situated in a context. So this is another thing that developmental psychologists do. They think about where people are situated. And this is really important. It's kind of the cultural influences on their development.
Yeah. Do you find that people, when they come to you, since you know about identity and are kind of an expert in that area, do you find that they are often like in an identity because they don't really want to be there? They want to be something else. And so they're kind of stuck in this vortex of, well, I have to be this because for whatever reason, and maybe they think it's to please other people or to satisfy somebody else's need. And then they're like, oh my God, I am so unhappy, but it's more at an identity level.
Absolutely. They can be going through a kind of identity crisis. I think it's so beautiful that you even mentioned that. A lot of times people can find themselves stuck in lives that really aren't about them. It's about what somebody else thought they should be doing. And so again, this goes back to really what it is that you are always talking about, which is that sense of, does my life, my identity, you know, again, identity is who am I, you know, where am I coming from, where am I going, and what is the point really of my existence? What am I offering to the world? And if that doesn't really fit with kind of what you were conditioned to do, this creates a lot of stress and unhappiness, because there's a big discrepancy between what people are encouraged to do and what they actually like long to do.
Yeah. One of the things that I've heard in terms of like words to watch for is should.
Yes.
Because absolutely. When you use the word should, it's like not because you really want to, it's because you think you're obligated to, or there's something that is pushing you to that instead of like pulling you to that. And
very interesting.
Yeah. So that's a, you know, just for my audience, whoever's listening out there, if you're doing things because you think you should do them, that is a indication that you need to step back and say, hey, because you want to be a, like get to. So it says like, I get to do this. And it's like there's more excitement with that, I guess, when you think about it. But yeah, I've heard that's a warning word. So you help busy professionals achieve their wellness goals in 7 core areas of health. And you talked about really wanting to help in stress management, which touches on, I mean, there's different things that cause stress, but like sleep is an indicator, I guess, or lack of sleep if you're stressed, right? And weight. Right. And so, yeah. So tell me about that, because I recently interviewed somebody and she was a surgeon, and she became a stress resilience expert. And it was fascinating about all the indicators of stress that are so invisible.
Yeah.
That people operate in the world walking around and they have all these ailments that they think are caused by something completely different, but the bottom line is it's stress. And so it's such an invisible illness, or it's an invisible, I don't know what you'd call it, but it's something that is causing illness kind of.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And that's really what I learned. Like when I wasn't doing well, I wasn't feeling well, I was gaining weight, I was feeling tense all the time, I was, you know, sort of arguing with my husband, having a difficult time, because again, I was working really, really hard, but I did not know about stress, I didn't know about stress management. And I really didn't, like you're describing, I really didn't know what was going on. And really, the medical, I thought to myself, why don't I know? And really, in many respects, it's because the medical profession is itself just kind of catching up to really understand that stress and a sort of chronic stress response, you know, all that cortisol, coursing through your veins, is really what's causing a lot of these sort of chronic diseases like heart disease, or, you know, that a lot of people die from, you know, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, all these types of ailments actually have this undercurrent of that chronic or mismanaged stress.
Yeah. I work with Alex Paulos, and one of the things, you know, we have people watching at a mall, because you can tell when somebody is not in their living their true to their authentic self. You know, they're in a kind of mismatched in identities kind of thing. And he can actually, and he was training me how to see it in people, like when they walk and when they move, because depending on your personality type, there's an inborn personality type. And so it's like, if you're in opposition with your import, you know, there's signs, you know, like, you know, stiff neck. And, you know, there are people who their inborn personality is kind of stiff. but you know, if you look at somebody and you know their inborn personality is not stiff and they're acting stiff, then that's a sign of stress. And so it was so amazing to see. And there were so many people in the mall that were stiff, that were like, you could tell were suffering from stress, that had that, you know, a lot of cortisol. Is it cortisone?
Right. Or cortisol?
Cortisol. Yeah. So I guess cortisone is the injection, right? Is that
help
give you cortisol?
I don't know. Like a steroid, I think.
Yeah. So tell me what happened when you were 53, because that was kind of a pivot point for you. So what were you doing that shifted things? Is that when you decided to do the PhD thing?
No, that's when I finished. So like at 53, I finished my PhD. And then of course, you know, there was the challenge, there's always the challenge with any degree, which is to connect the dots between like your newfound knowledge and expertise and actual like employment. And this is really challenging, especially at that time, it was very challenging. So I, of course, you know, put out lots and lots of resumes and I really didn't find a job. You know, so I thought to myself, okay, what am I going to do? Because I am not, you know, letting all this effort and all this knowledge go to waste, because I know that if I can get it in the hands of people, they will benefit, right? In the same way that I had benefited, because I had benefited from the knowledge as well. It helped me to understand so much about myself and why I was doing what I was doing and what I wanted to do, how to figure out what I, you know, like kind of best practice, what I should be doing, should in the good sense, like if I wanted to get good outcomes, right? So I really wanted to be able to use the knowledge to help other people in the same way that I had been helped. So
were you still in Wall Street, working in Wall Street?
No, I had moved by then to Tucson.
Okay.
It's where I live now. Mm-hmm. So that I could go back to school at the University of Arizona.
Okay.
And so I sort of started looking around and thinking, well, maybe I should be like a social worker or a counselor, right? But again, if you look at these, there's lots and lots of study. Again, we're talking about another 10 years before you're qualified, basically. So I said to myself, okay, what else can I do? And I really came across coaching. And I knew that there were a lot of coaching programs out there that were really dedicated to transformation. And I knew that as a developmental psychologist, like that's the meat and potatoes of what I do, which is how to help people, again, up-level their game every time they're called to this new sort of developmental challenge or crisis. I mean, we like to think that our lives at some point is going to level out and it's going to be like smooth sailing. But the point is every new place, stage in your life presents a whole new set of challenges that you have to then again try to work through and figure out how you're best going to manage it. And so I thought, okay, that's really what I want to do. And so I started looking around for coaching programs. And that's when I found the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine. And that's when I decided to join and to start learning all about health and wellness coaching. Mm.
And is that a lot of nutrition or, you know, what does it mean? A lot of people don't know what integrative wellness means.
That's a great question. Yes, integrative really sort of, again, means that it's a kind of holistic approach, that the sum of the parts are greater, right, than the whole. In other words, you really can't just do one thing. You really kind of have to attend to the interdependence of, in this case, as we're talking about, the seven core areas, which you mentioned are sleep, nutrition, movement, relationships, resilience, spirituality, and environment. Of course, there are other areas of your life that you need to attend to, like, you know, your career and what it is that you're doing every day that hopefully lights you up and, you know, showcases your talents. And then also your financial well-being that comes from that as well. But in the seven core areas of health, those are the ones they really focus on. And yes, there's lots and lots of research built into that program that really, again, helps to specify best practice. So as a coach, I'm able to sort of see, well, tell me what you're doing, and then I can do the compare contrast and see what, you know, what they should be doing in the good sense of the word, and then help to move them in the direction of best practice. Mm,
yeah. So somebody might be wondering what led you to coaching, because, you know, you could do a lot of different things probably, but what is it about coaching that lights you up?
Well, I think what I love about coaching really is helping clients to sort of like break the code on whatever it is that's not working for them, you know, and really helping them to sort of liberate themselves, as we said, from some of the ideas that really just aren't serving them anymore. Mm-hmm. And really help to empower them to sort of dig deep and feel inside of themselves what their ideas are and the direction that they'd like to go in, and then help them figure out how to clarify that and develop that, and then to create, you know, strategies, plans for how they're going to move in that direction.
Yeah. And so if there's somebody, what kind of symptoms would they show? Like, I need what Leslie does. What would be kind of like, if I saw on a movie screen what was going on with them, like what would be in their life or not in their life that would say, you know, I know Leslie, Dr. Leslie can fix this.
Great. Thanks so much. Yes. So stress can show up, like you mentioned, in many different ways. And one of the big indicators is if you're having difficulty sleeping, if you're having a really difficult time falling asleep, staying asleep, when you get up in the morning, you feel very exhausted. This is an indicator that probably you're stressed. In other words, you're having that chronic stress response. You're not coming down, you're not de-stressing, you're not decompressing, such that you're able to kind of relax and fall asleep. And then you get up the next day and start it sort of all over again.
Yeah. And your mind probably is going in 1,000 directions.
Exactly. Another indicator.
Can't turn it off. Yeah.
Yes. Another indicator is really busy, busy, busy mind, and not being able to sort of quiet the mind or also be able to think clearly. Like some people might feel like they have a lot of brain fog, that they can't really concentrate, that they're distracted all the time. There might be a sense that things pester them, like the same, like a rumination, stuff keeps coming over and over and over again. These can be indicators. Clearly, like stress eating or emotional eating, such as people are gaining weight, these can be indicators. If they're having trouble, if they're tense all the time and they're sort of creating a distance with their spouses or their kids because they're kind of snapping at them, or they're kind of isolating because they're just overwhelmed and they want to just kind of shut down. So these are other really good indicators.
Yeah. I would carry a lot in my shoulders and stuff. I think being aware of, you know, your physicality, like, are you feeling kind of relaxed or are you feeling like stiff, like I was saying, you know? But I remember sitting, sometimes I would sit at my desk and when I had my corporate job, and I would be like, I would just all of a sudden realize I've been like, my shoulders were hunched and I just had to like take a break for a second and just forcibly relax myself. So what came up when you were describing these things was like, sounds a lot like menopause. So I think that a lot of people write off stress as like, oh, I just menopause, and menopause is horrible. But I think a lot of us go through these kind of midlife crises of identity. And so how do you differentiate? And then you go to the doctor and it's like, they think it's menopause. So, cause they're not really well-trained in what stress is, which is what this person who was a real doctor was talking about. She said, like, the medicine, people get trained, they don't know anything about the mental health. So how do you know, and what are some indicators to help people like, okay, this is more serious than menopause? I know hot flashes are menopause, but so how do you differentiate?
Well, I think that's so amazing that that's wonderful that you're talking about the kind of, some people call it like a midlife review. It's a little different than a midlife crisis. A midlife crisis really sort of comes a little sooner, like when you're maybe 35 or 40 and you're sort of beginning to see that, uh-oh, I don't think my career is going in the direction that I wanted to go in. I don't think I'm going to get where I thought I was going to get. I think I'm starting, maybe I'm missing out on something, you know, this kind of thing. A midlife review happens a little later, right? Like you say, around menopause, when we really start to see for the first time, like, uh-oh, death is ahead. This is really the first time in our life when we really begin to see like the end of the line. And we really begin to feel that pressure or that anxiety about, we can often, like, I always sort of say, it's like your day of reckoning, you know, when you really do have your sort of, okay, let's get out the, you know, the book and let's start going through everything and asking yourself the question, like, how do you feel you've done? How do you feel things are going? How do you feel that you are progressing in your life, your legacy, right? The bigger picture of your life. And the sense that, you know, on your deathbed, are you going to be happy or are you going to be like really unhappy? Like, again, and regret. A lot of regret is a really good indicator. If you have regrets about how things are going or how things have gone, this is a really good indicator that it's time to start looking at what yet can be done to rectify those regrets, right? To help you live them rather than just push them or continue to stew in them, right? So a lot of people kind of do one of three things. They'll either push them aside and try to forget about it. And this usually doesn't work because it usually keeps coming back because it is a kind of a call, a kind of your soul calling or something, if you will. But it's a kind of sense that I have something important I want to do. Let's do it. I've been waiting long enough. When are we going to do it, right? Or they can kind of just get stuck in a lot of really like of these negative emotions because there is some guilt, some shame, some grief, some anger, right? So there can be a lot of negative emotions and you can easily get mired. I know for me, I got mired in a lot of negative emotions. Or you can say, okay, let me go through and look at what is there and dig a little deeper about what was valuable that was missed. And let me try and see how I can bring that forward and dust it off, polish it up, and like, again, develop it and see how I can begin to move it forward.
Gosh, that really hit home for me because I remember that 50 was coming and I was all about thinking about when I died and yeah, that I didn't want to die with regret. And that's why, yeah, I made some major life changes, yeah, at 47 is because I was like, I don't know how much time I have and I don't want to be living it like this.
Yeah.
Whereas when I was in my like late 30s, I was more like, what's on my bucket list? I want to do my, you know, what do I want to do before, you know, just like more thinking of life from an adventure standpoint, not really any kind of crisis per se, other than maybe getting a new car, or, you know, change things up or changing houses to change things up, but no real life shifts. But that 50, I think did a number on me in terms of making me sit up and pay attention to where, yeah, I was going and how I wanted to live the remainder of my life.
Yeah.
I had this vision of me on my deathbed and not, you know, listing what ifs.
Yep.
And that was, I did not want that to be in my vocabulary when, yeah, I was laying there. I wanted to like, I opened every door. I examined everything that I wanted to examine. And thank God I did that. And thank God I had that. I don't know what it was, universal day. I got sick of, you know, average. That's why I think I so relate with the Not Your Average Grandma moniker, because I was like living life very average. And I was determined not to be average anymore, not to settle for the life that I didn't want. And I was settling. And so, yeah, that was the big move for me. So thank you for that insight. It was really, really good. It will probably hit some people. So if you're there in that kind of place where I was, what would you recommend somebody do as a first, you know, so scary when you're there.
Yes.
Like, so like it's, you can be like so scared that, you know, it's easier to stay in that situation often. And a lot of people don't know, like, well, if I could take a step, what is it? It's so many unknowns and we're so afraid of the unknowns. So we stay where the known is, even though it's not making us happy.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. I think the biggest thing too, I think in our culture, this is why it's so great that you're doing this podcast, because I think that a lot of people don't talk about this. We are really sort of, well, for starters, like you talked about, we're a death-denying culture, so nobody's really talking about the long haul and what you really want your legacy. And, you know, like some people get this information, but a lot of people don't. A lot of people are just trying to get through the day, just trying to get through the year, just trying to get through what they're doing right now. And again, sort of with the blinders on and the heads down, just trying to get it done because there's so much to do. So I really think, like, for me, I really felt that with my graduate studies, it was really such a privilege to actually take a pause and actually start to explore again and to try and take that narrowed point of, you know, perspective and expand it, open it in an effort to try and see other things that were possible. Of course, sometimes, again, you can spot opportunities. And again, the opportunity costs can bring about a lot of grief, a lot of regret, a lot of discomfort. So the point is, it's a good idea to find somebody who really understands what it is, because not everybody will have this experience. If you are really well situated in your life and you are already really doing things that feel fulfilling and make sense to you, you're probably going to move through this transition without much difficulty. But again, if you're somebody who, for whatever reason, sort of got pigeonholed into something that didn't really work for you, then you might have like a bigger sort of crack up or a bigger challenge, right? More guilt, more of those negative emotions, more grief, mm-hmm. right? And more regret and more impetus then to go. But you're right, we can be really scared because, again, we don't know how to get started.
Mm. So I think I heard you say, if you're using yourself as an example, go where your interest lies, kind of look for what makes you curious. Like, what, you know, sometimes I say to my students, just do what's fun. Like, it might make no sense and it might not be what, you know, like, just think of something, some kind of an adventure that you've never done and go do it, because while you're doing it, it's going to open this mental channel to other things coming in, right? So you'll get ideas, you might meet somebody that leads you to some other thing, and, you know, just stop doing what you're doing and do something different.
Exactly. Stop doing what you're doing and do something different. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. And all women, I think, you know, even though, you know, I found that I was really empowered. Like, I grew up in a really sort of religious background. And so for me, I was late to the kind of feminism thing, right? This was really sort of a lot of what was going on for me that was really holding me back, were some of these kind of prescriptions for how to be a good woman. Mm. And so for me, again, I was so glad that I bumped into some of these kind of feminist ideas that really sort of helped me to recognize that it was okay for me to take on some of these more quote unquote masculine characteristics, in which I could be more assertive, or I could be more noisy, or I could be more messy, or I could be more demanding, or I could be, you know, some of these other things. I could be more strong and vigorous with regard to figuring out what I wanted to do and going out and trying to do it, you know, make my way in the world, rather than just sort of, you know, because you can have, you know, for me, there's those things in there that say what you should be doing, like you should be staying home with your kids, or you should be staying home. So the thing is, a lot of times people will have that sort of lingering, those ties that are kind of holding them back from really sort of feeling like, no, I want to go out in the world and I want to sort of, you know, carve a way for myself. And I want to go out, especially for women, to go out and really do something that is their own.
Yeah. Stand up for yourself.
Yes. That's what happened to me, like really sort of trying to become, as it were, a person in my own right, who was really able to do sort of all the things and myself. So it was really kind of, again, a process of, they call it individuating, or some people call it realizing, you know, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, mm-hmm. really becoming, as it were, self-actualized.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I share that with my students. So that's really good. Yeah. So it's so funny because I think too, as women, most of us women who are our parents who have had children are natural nurturers, you know, even women who wanted to have children and can't, you know, they're natural nurturers. They might be nurturing pets, but so it's interesting that you talk about the religious upbringing, because there's societal kind of like the way you were raised and whatever those norms are in your culture that could also do similar things to kind of like your natural senses to, as a nurturer, to pour from your cup for somebody else. But then you've got these, you know, some sort of cultural thing that in your case kind of did a number on you in terms of limited you in some ways. So that's very, yeah, cool. Very interesting. Love this conversation. I could talk to you all day. Yeah. So, well, it's we're kind of needing to wrap things up. So one of the things that, do you have any like final words, tips that you'd like to share before we close?
Any final tips, words to share? I think one of the biggest things too, I would just share like the importance really sort of self-compassion, which is really like figuring out how to befriend yourself and how to sort of, you know, embrace yourself and accept yourself where you are and recognize that, you know, you're not alone in the struggle. Like there are lots of other people out there, especially women who are going through the menopause thing, going through the empty nest thing, going through the, you know, the second act thing. And there's lots of stress, of course, that can come with this. But one of the best things to do, especially when the negative feeling starts to come up, is really to embrace yourself and to recognize that you're not alone and to really try to be kind to yourself and say, like what you mentioned, how can I best take care of myself? How can I, you know, eat nourishing food? How can I get some exercise? How can I make a friend or talk to a friend? How can I talk to myself in ways that are kind and gentle in the same way that I would talk to a beloved child or a beloved friend or someone else who was in need? Because a lot of times we can really be hard on ourselves. Our internal conversation can really be tough. So I think that's one of the biggest things, to try and embrace yourself and try and befriend yourself and be kind to yourself.
Yeah, I love that. Self-compassion is so important. One thing that Mel Robbins did recently, you know, she came out with a book and a high five habit or something like that. And she did a challenge and it was like and that people had to post pictures of them high-fiving in the mirror. So that, yeah, that to me is like, when you were talking about it, I thought, what's something simple somebody can do is every time they look in the mirror, smile and say high five, you know, like, cause you're like, you're looking at yourself and you're in a way just connecting and being happy to see yourself and
yes,
yeah. And kind of like good job kind of thing in the mirror. So that's so cool. So yeah. So tell me what living a not your average life means to you.
Well, for me, as I mentioned before, again, it's really just continuing to pursue those dreams that you have, whatever comes there for you, trying to find some way to continue to try and pursue those things, how to whatever degree that you can, so that you can feel that you really do have that kind of self expression that is really very unique to your heart, to your soul, to your preferences, to your deep desires.
That's beautiful. So yeah, follow your dreams.
Yep.
And get rid of the shoulds. turn them into I get to's. Thank you so much for being here. It was lovely chatting, finally meeting you and on Zoom instead of just email. So thanks so much. And it's going to be a great episode for people. Lots of great tips. So
great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.